And we're back with more of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Less than 90 days before caucus day here in Iowa, between now and February 3rd, our IPR news team will continue to present conversations with the candidates on Morning Edition, All Things Considered, our podcast Caucus Land, and here, of course, on River to River. Today, we welcome for this half hour, Democratic candidate, New Jersey Senator Cory Booker. Welcome to the program. Cory Booker, are you there?
I am here. Can you hear me? Hello.
Okay. We've got you now, Cory Booker. We want to invite our listeners. Thank you for being with us, Senator.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be on. Thank you for having me.
I want to invite our listeners to join us and to email your questions, rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org, rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. We'll see if we have phone capability in just a moment. But first of all, before we get to some email and social media questions, Senator, for those who don't know you, let me do this almost debate style in less than a minute. Tell us what makes you different than the other Democratic hopefuls.
Well, I've run a campaign from the very beginning talking to the Democratic Party. We cannot define ourselves by what we're against. We need to start talking about what we're for. And now more than ever, this moral moment demands that we not talk simply about beating Republicans. We have got to be the party that unites Americans. My whole career has been about running at the toughest problems, from taking an inner city and financial freefall, turning it around, to passing major bipartisan pieces of legislation in the Senate by bringing Americans together and affirming that the lines that divide us are not nearly as strong as the ties that bind us. The next president after this person who's acting like a moral vandal in office has got to be someone that can heal, be a part of a revival of civic grace, help us to be the nation we're called to be, and put more indivisible back into this one nation under God. That's my career. That's been my life purpose, and that's how I'll lead as president of the United States.
Join our conversation live with Senator Cory Booker, Democratic presidential candidate, 1-866-780-9100, 1-866-780-9100. River to River at iowapublicradio.org. I'll ask our listeners, when we do get callers, to please cut to the chase, be brief. We want to get to as many topics as possible to get acquainted with Cory Booker before these 20 minutes run out. Let's talk about the impeachment inquiry very quickly, led by the House Democrats, Senator, entering a new phase with public hearings next week. House Democrats have been releasing transcripts from previous closed-door testimony. Mitch McConnell said this week, if the vote were now, the Senate would not convict the president of abuse of power, high crimes and misdemeanors. The general election is 1 year away. What do you think are the chances that Donald Trump will no longer be president at that time, that the Democratic nominee will face, for instance, Vice President Pence?
I sincerely don't know. And I just want to be very blunt. This can't be about electoral politics or partisanship. We are talking about removing a sitting president from office through an impeachment proceedings. We've only seen this done four times in American history, anything like this. This has got to be about a sober, objective evaluation of the facts. This president, the more information that comes out, the more it becomes clear that he was withholding critical national security resources from an ally for personal gain. And so, again, we can't let this just go by because there's an election coming up. Future generations are going to look back at this and see, what did we do when the very values of our country, when the constitutional mandates were being undermined? We have to make sure we go through this process in a sobered, objective way with the gravity with which it demands and evaluate it independent from any election. Because, again, no one is above the law. All of us swore an oath to protect and defend the Constitution. As a United States Senator, I'm going to do my duty, even though I think this president has violated his.
Clearly, the weeks running up to this, the first in the nation test here in Iowa, the Iowa caucuses will be dominated by impeachment news, especially with these open hearings coming starting next week. Do you think this benefits or harms the Democratic primary, perhaps prevents Democratic Party issues from being thoroughly discussed and understood by Iowa Democrats?
Look, I've gotten to know Iowa a lot over my lifetime. My grandmother was born and raised in Des Moines. I've been coming to family reunions out there over my lifetime. And I have a lot of faith in Iowans that they can actually pay attention to a presidential election and an impeachment proceeding at the same time. And my town halls and my conversations and my house parties there demonstrate that to me unequivocally. So I'm excited about the Iowa caucuses. I'm excited about this tradition that Iowans take so seriously. And I'm confident that, as they've done before, Iowans do a good job at picking presidents. And that's why my team is working so hard on the ground there today.
Before we get to questions from our listeners, Senator, yesterday you launched the idea of a City 2030 project, which you've described as a national competition that would designate and economically invest in at least 50 small and medium-sized cities. You also proposed signing a law aimed at targeting federal resources to communities in deep and persistent poverty. What can Iowans living in the state's many rural communities, now many of these, you are well aware, are struggling with economic and population drain, the hollowing out, it's been termed, what can they expect from you if elected president?
Well, I think people from communities like that should understand that I led a city that had 60 years of population decline, 60 years of losing its tax base and seeing it being hollowed out. And through my leadership in about two terms as mayor, we completely reversed those trends. First time in 60 years our population is growing. The biggest economic development period in Newark in generations. Jobs coming back, entrepreneurs starting up. Our school system turning around. I do not believe there is any place in America that doesn't have the innate ability to thrive, and that the cities and communities, especially the rural communities I've visited, what they're lacking right now is having a president that has a vision that sees the value and the worth of those communities. And so our plan really speaks to just those things, from everything from investing in rural infrastructure and rural hospitals and rural education, all the way to having a plan for getting more economic resources to help the jobs thrive in those areas. We have to be a nation that understands we cannot compete globally unless we cultivate the value and the worth in all of our communities. Because right now, America's economic growth is this 4 or 5 metropolitan areas that are just dominating. But that's not enough. We need to make sure that we get back to strategies that help communities all across this country thrive. I've done that as a mayor of New Jersey's largest city. I'm going to do that as president for cities and small towns all across America.
Okay, where does the money for that, those big ideas come from? Should taxpayers expect to see tax increases to support these projects?
No, quite the contrary. And this is what we learned in Newark, is that if you actually create for working people more money in their pocket, they actually will help to fuel economic strength. And so I'm going to reverse these toxic Trump tax cuts that gave corporations tax breaks that have allowed many, like from Amazon to Chevron, pay effectively zero in taxes. Reverse those and give 150 million Americans a tax break through the doubling the earned income tax credit, which will give not only 150 million Americans a tax break, but will cut poverty by a third. Putting resources in the hands of working people actually gets more money recycling in an economy and helps to fuel small businesses and opportunity for more people. So we can pay for this by doing common sense things and having a more balanced, fair tax code. It really is about investing in people, investing in places, and doing the things that can help our economy grow. And I'll give you one example of this, because rural folks understand this, that infrastructure is critical for economic growth. We know that nationally, every dollar invested in infrastructure leads to about $2 in economic growth. Well, in rural communities who are struggling with everything from access to broadband and the internet, high-speed internet, even just to rural water systems and more, that those are the kind of investments that create the bedrock for economic growth and success of our children, and success of local economies. And we've got to start focusing on those kind of details, because the way we do things on the federal level is almost silly. Some of them are competitive grants. And so you have rural areas competing for grants with cities like New York City that have armies of grant writers making sure that they're winning these grants. Well, my program begins to make sure that we target dollars and resources for those communities that are too often starved of them, to make investments that we know will reap dividends for those cities, for those communities, for those small towns, and most importantly, for the people that are within them.
Democratic presidential candidate Cory Booker joining us live. If you've just joined us, Cory Booker on the line with us, answering questions, many from our listeners. This is Jeff, one of our listeners, so wants to know about climate change. Would addressing climate change be in your top 10 issues? Where would it rank? I'm going to throw in there, too, quickly, because we're trying to rifle through a lot of territory here. How do we achieve a political consensus? It seems that we know how to attack climate change. We just have a real difference of opinion politically.
Well, Jeff, when I was mayor of the city of Newark, we had this problem for decades. And back when I was mayor, there was a president named Bush who wouldn't join the Kyoto Accords. And so I created a larger coalition, joined with a larger coalition of mayors to deal with this issue. And I told my city council, this isn't going to be a separate issue. The climate crisis will be the lens through which we do everything. And we did everything from environmentally retrofitting our buildings in our city that created jobs, lower taxpayer energy costs, created apprenticeship programs for our kids. We said with reentry programs for people coming home from prison, we're going to put them into work greening our city and created jobs for them.
But to the point of political consensus, there are many in the Republican Party, especially, are in denial. How do you get over that hurdle?
Absolutely. I was just addressing the first part of that question, that this is going to be the priority with which I look at everything. But your question is the biggest one. And it's a question for every issue. We have a group of people running for president where the issues that divide us are small compared to the issues that divide us in Mitch McConnell or Donald Trump. And so the big question will be, who in this field has the best record for getting things done that other folks couldn't? And so I want you to know, I was the mayor of the largest city with a Republican governor, and he, Chris Christie, and I could write a dissertation on our disagreements, but he and I forged common ground that enabled us to transform school systems, create a biggest period of economic development in the city. In the Senate, I was told that you couldn't pass big bills, especially not on issues like mass incarceration, which would lead to the liberation of thousands of people from prison, because Republicans wouldn't go along with that. Well, working in the Senate, the only major bipartisan bill to pass underneath this president was the bill I led from the Democratic side. And then the final thing, you need to make sure we have a proven leader that can use creativity to get action when none was taken before. When I became mayor of the city of Newark, I couldn't get foundations to return my call, couldn't get developers interested, but I found creative ways to expand the moral imagination of an entire country, getting developers and philanthropists from across the country to invest in a city before they thought was just mired in crime and corruption. And so my record is going at the toughest problems, and not just dealing with them in a democratic way, but pulling in coalitions that are unexpected, whether it's me working with the Manhattan Institute, a right-leaning think tank in New York, to partner with me in Newark to deal with criminal justice reentry issues, to even in the Senate being able to work across the aisle and get things done. That's my record. And I do not believe that there's anything we can't do. American history is a perpetual testimony to the achievement of the impossible. But necessary to do big things is creating broader coalition, new American majorities. It's how we went to the moon and beat the Russians who led with Sputnik, by bringing together hidden figures with white male astronauts. It's how we beat the Nazis, by massive coalitions, American mobilization. The next president must have a track record for doing that and must have a driving vision to repair this nation and bring us together to focus on the big threats like climate change. What I will do as president of the United States.
A little over 5 minutes left with Cory Booker. We're going to move on to a couple of other issues. Hope we can fit them in. Cory Booker, combating gun violence has been a major issue for you, both in your home state of New Jersey and in your presidential campaign. Much of your gun policies have focused around mass gun violence and urban gun violence. And while those are clearly a big, big problem here in Iowa, in smaller and more rural communities, those concerns may feel a bit farther from home. How do you make this argument for greater gun regulations to rural voters who may own guns and feel they do so responsibly?
Well, first of all, I think there is something powerful about Iowa's history of caring about issues that might not hit them right away. Remember, Iowans were leading on civil rights issues. My family comes from a town called Buxton that had blacks and whites living together. Historians call it an American utopia. Iowans were doing sit-in movements before they even started in Greensboro, North Carolina. We as a country understand that the number one reason we form government is for the common defense. And the levels of people dying in our country from suicides, which Iowans can relate to, all the way to school shootings, we know that this is a national crisis. And I know that Iowans, and I've seen the polls, agree with the common sense measures that gun owners even agree on, like having universal background checks, or almost 80% of Americans agree on something as basic as, hey, you need a license to drive a car. But licensing doesn't undermine your freedom to drive. Neither would licensing undermine a person's ability to own a gun, but it just makes sure, and the states that have done it actually have seen about 40% drops in shootings. And so there is common ground in this country on this issue. Iowans know that, and they'll stand with the president who understands that my job is to protect the American people. And as a person who has been personally impacted by the horrors of urban gun violence, I know when I stand up in front of Iowa audiences that they are fellow Americans and they stand with us because, as I say over and over again, patriotism is love of country, and you cannot love your country unless you love your fellow countrymen and women. And love is not sentimentality. Love says that injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere. And Iowans of all people get that value, get that virtue, and will stand with me in this fight when I'm president.
Quickly to health care. Your campaign website states that you plan to fight for Medicare for all. But you've described yourself as a pragmatist when it comes to enforcing this idea. You also have supported improving the Affordable Care Act, known as Obamacare as well. How dedicated are you to the idea of Medicare for all, and how do you plan to balance these ideas, Medicare for all and improving the ACA?
Yeah, well, it's the same way as I led when I was in the city of Newark. I fought every day for the values and the dreams that I think we need to get to. We must, as a country, get to a point where healthcare is a right for everyone. I think a single-payer system is the best way to get there. But I will not make perfect the enemy of the good in a time that everybody in Iowa knows we need a lot more good, at a time that people are rationing their insulin or being bankrupted by healthcare costs when your insurance coverage doesn't go far enough.
Would you ask people to give up their private health care if you are elected?
What I'm going to ask people to do is help me get down the line, and I do not think that's a necessary step. The first step has to be at a divided Democratic caucus. I know the Senate. Right now we don't have the Democratic votes to support Medicare for all at this point, which means that the next president is going to have to continue to fight for that ideal, but do the pragmatic things we can do. We were one vote away from lowering Medicare eligibility to 55 under Obama. We can get that done. We have every candidate, including Bernie Sanders, is on public option bills. That might be the next step. There is nobody that understands the pain of having a broken healthcare system like me, as a guy who was a leader of a city with a high level of poverty. I see it every single day. We have got to have a president that does not back away from their ideals, but every single day fights to make progress with a sense of urgency, and understands and is connected to the pain of real people who are suffering under the savagely broken healthcare system. And so I will every single day move the ball down the field. As a former Pac-10 football player, I know how to gain ground. I know how to score points and put them on the board. We're going to make progress towards the actual victory of healthcare being a right in this country. And we're going to do it by cobbling together the coalition necessary to continue to get momentum towards our ultimate goal.
Senator Booker, very quickly, two last things, please, briefly. This is a email from Nick. One of the things that increases civility in the discourse is ranked choice voting, which helps bring in more perspectives, writes Nick. At least one of the other candidates makes this an issue. Would you adopt this as a policy proposal?
You know, I won an election in the past because of ranked choice voting. I think it's a really good system. Hard to enact, so I'm not going to tell you it's going to be one of my top priorities, but I actually believe in that ideal and think it's a way to ensure that our system is more democratic. So it's something I would support, but I just want to say to you, of the reforms that I have going into office, reforming our politics, the first one is getting this unbelievable, outrageous levels of money out of politics. We need publicly financed elections. What we're seeing right now is just perverse, the level. That's why I don't take corporate PAC money. I don't take pharma C-suite executive money. I don't take federal lobbyist money, and why I always ask for small dollar contributions at CoryBooker.com. That's how we're going to win this election, and then that's how I'm going to turn around and govern to stop this kind of dark money, outrageous campaign finance system that we have right now, to end it and change it.
You mentioned you're a former Pac-10 football player. Finally here, we like to ask all of the candidates we're having on what you do to stay sharp on the campaign trail, mentally and physically.
You know what? I my faith is really important to me. I ground myself in prayer and meditation, which helps me to keep sharp of mind, exercising, keep that blood flowing. And I do my best not to give in to my greatest weakness, which is empty calories and carbohydrates. So I try to keep a diet that's somewhat balanced during this insanity.
What type of meditation, by the way?
You know, I actually trained with, when I was at Yale Law School, went to meet with a Buddhist teacher. So, this incredible sort of mindfulness meditation technique. So I'm a big proponent of meditation, and I've seen it work in schools with kids, all the way to, you know, some of the best high performers in business and sports that I admire are people that have taken on a meditation practice. So it's a valuable thing for me. And as a Christian, it's a valuable part of my sort of how I stay centered and focused on my highest and best ideals.
Okay, Senator Booker, you've given us a number of things to meditate on. Thank you for this conversation.
Thank you. I wish you all the best. I look forward to seeing everybody when I'm back out there in Iowa very soon.
Thank you, Senator. Democratic presidential candidate Cory Booker. River to River is produced by Caitlin Harrop, Matt Alvarez, and Rick Brewer. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. This is Thursday. That means tomorrow's a News Buzz. Wonderful. Tune in for our News Buzz edition tomorrow. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.